You're listening to Let's Talk Macro,
brought to you by Bandhan Mutual Fund.
Hello and welcome back, everyone. You're catching me, Ahalya, on another episode of Let's Talk Macro. This is the podcast series by Bandhan Mutual Fund, where we, as you know, discuss topical and relevant macroeconomic topics. Today, joining us, as per usual, is Srijit Balasubramanian, economist in the Fixed Income Fund Management team. Hi, Srijit. Thank you so much for joining us once again.
Hi, Ahalya. How are we doing?
Doing very well. And Srijit, today's conversation, you know, it's quite grand. It's, I think, as macro as they come, because we're really taking a look at the global economy. You know, in our previous episode, we sort of talked about how the recovery in China post its reopening and, you know, its economic growth has been kind of lackluster, you know, shying away from our expectations. But at the same time, we've also had a lot of strong data from other parts of the world, particularly the US. So today's conversation is basically to focus on what's happening around the world, especially in the US and Europe. We're also going to touch upon, you know, India and other major economies through a summary of all the recent significant economic data, which, Srijit, you will be giving us. We're also going to look at the recent central bank monetary policy decisions, how market expectations for interest rates have moved, and what all of the data surprises really mean for the policy path ahead. So shall we dive into it? A lot to cover today.
Sure, let's go.
So let's begin with, I think, the big one, the US. Some of the recent growth data here has been pretty strong and not in line with, I think, all of us were expecting some kind of a slowdown. So do you want to just give us an overview of the situation there and why that's probably happening?
Sure. So first, the banking sector issues, if you remember, in the US from March, they that seems to have settled for now, although credit growth has eased and lending standards have tightened. On the growth front, we had quite a few data surprises to the upside. Recent prints for durable goods orders, University of Michigan consumer sentiment, conference board consumer confidence, retail sales are all higher than consensus expectation. And Q1 GDP growth was also revised higher recently, with consumer spending being stronger. One aspect here is the divergence between manufacturing and services. So if you look at the purchasing managers indices, the PMIs for US, both manufacturing and services PMIs were rising during the initial part of the year, with services being stronger. If you see in the last couple of months, the divergence has actually increased, with the manufacturing PMI falling. Although some regional surveys like the New York Empire State Manufacturing Index turned out to be stronger. The other set of strong data is coming from the housing sector, which is staging an early recovery of sorts after being hit by high mortgage rates from last year. If you see the last few months again, growth in the housing starts, the housing market index, they have recovered. Mainly various measures of housing, like housing sales, actually, like, you know, new single family homes sold and units sold above asking price, that has increased. Inventory and active listings for sale have fallen. And the average time it typically takes for a residential property to be sold, has started falling again. But there are two things to really note here. One is that the commercial property sector is still not doing that great, particularly the office space, with the exposure to higher exposure to smaller banks and the drop in availability of credit, given issues with occupancy rates there and so on. And the second thing is that the some of the strong pickup in recent new home sales is because existing home sales or resales are down quite a bit. So owners or sellers of existing homes, if they want to purchase a new home, they'll have to let go of the much lower mortgage rates they had logged in earlier and buy homes at the current much higher rates. So pace of resales is down quite a bit. So housing, in effect, which is a very interest rate sensitive sector, has bottomed out a bit recently. So growth in the US, like you said, has held up better than expected. And this is also reflected in the economic outlook in the latest minutes of the FOMC meeting, if you see. So it now sees the level of real output moving below the staff's estimate of potential output only in early 2025. This was 2024 in the previous minutes.
Right.
And it also says the possibility of the economy continuing to grow slowly and actually avoiding a downturn is almost as likely as it is as its base case of a mild recession. So overall, positive growth surprise in the US.
That's interesting, Srijit. So growth data and the housing sector particularly are doing quite well in the US, beating expectations. Yeah. Very surprising, like you said. What do you think has been driving these surprises, though? And is this also going to have an impact on inflation, given that is what central banks have been, primarily looking at for a while now?
Yeah, so one main reason for the still quite strong consumption, like I said, we have spoken about this before, is the excess savings with households. Mm-hmm. This was primarily from the heavy fiscal stimulus during the pandemic, you know, in the form of generous cash handouts and unemployment insurance, and also the inability or unwillingness to go out and spend back then. So according to our calculation, excess savings was around $2.3 trillion, of which around 50% has been spent. So roughly another $1.1 trillion remains. Now, this is an aggregate number at the economy level, and savings with various income groups could be different. So, for example, it is possible higher income groups have more savings and that their marginal propensity to consume is relatively lower. Mm-hmm. Despite this, the current total excess savings is quite high, and there could also be a wealth effect from this and even the growth in stock market there recently. The other main driver is the labor market. Although it has actually been getting better, still quite tight compared to pre-pandemic. If you see non-farm payroll addition, that has mostly met expectations almost every month for a while. Mm-hmm. Monthly earnings growth has eased a bit, but is again higher than pre-pandemic. And, you know, the case is similar for job openings to hires ratio, which is still quite elevated. The unemployment rate and initial claims for unemployment insurance has, in fact, only inched up a bit. So a good part of the recent strength is from the services sector, which has remained strong. So the labor market is still quite some distance away from being consistent with 2% inflation. The U.S. consumer price inflation has eased from its high of peaked at around 9.1% last year. And this is due to, you know, easing supply constraints, soft energy prices, base effects, and some rotation in demand from goods to services. Rentals, that is housing rentals, have been easing. So what is left and what the Fed really focuses on now is the non-energy, non-housing services, which is the core services. So growth there has only been slightly slower. So there is more scope there. And this part of CPI is really closely correlated with the factors that we just discussed, which is the labor market, excess savings and wealth effect. And so there is, overall still some distance left.
All right. So it's become clear that the U.S. economy, you know, has been holding up better than expected. And yeah, because of that, inflation, particularly from the services side, definitely still has some distance to go in terms of easing. You know, I think it's important to also move across now to Europe. What's the latest there on growth and inflation? Is it similar to the U.S.? Are we tracking similarities or differences?
Okay, so in the euro area, growth-related data has been weaker, and that is a key difference from US. Mm-hmm. So quarter-on-quarter, real GDP growth has been negative in the December and March quarters already. Manufacturing PMI has been falling and is much weaker than it is for the US. Industrial production, economic sentiment, and retail sales have been weaker than expected. Now, this is particularly so for Germany, which is manufacturing-oriented, and so the data there, like PMIs and factory orders, have been weaker. For households, consumer confidence remains weak. Retail sales volume is falling, even at the headline level and across categories, and house prices have been easing. So growth is clearly showing weakness there. However, the labor market is tight even there. Unemployment rate is lower than pre-pandemic and at a historical low. Job vacancy rate is higher. Wages and salaries continue to move higher at a good pace, and negotiated wage growth has been strong. A good part of the strength is the, you know, is in the construction and services sector again, as manufacturing is weak. On inflation in the euro area, apart from the supply constraints, energy played a major role, but this has been coming off quite well. Food inflation, which is another major driver, has started to come off. And more broadly, prices of goods have been coming off, but excluding energy, a part of it is a good part of it is only durables. And services inflation, just like in the US, continues to remain strong. So we actually compare US inflation to that in the euro area. US CPI was at 4% in May, while euro area is at 6.1%. The US headline CPI peaked at 9% in June last year, while for the EA, it peaked later in October 2022 at a much higher level of 10.6%. Even core inflation peaked out very recently for the euro area, like 6 months after it did for the US. So this, as we mentioned, is because goods disinflation in the euro area started later, and this has been shallower, and goods also have a much higher weight in the CPI basket for the euro area.
Right.
Meanwhile, services inflation remains strong. So for the euro area, when compared with the US, growth data has been weaker, but labor market is similarly strong, and inflation is again coming off, but at a slower pace.
Again, I think kind of counterintuitive that the key difference recently is on growth. US data has been surprising to the upside, while the euro area to the downside. And, you know, given that we've had many conversations actually from the policy perspective, Srijit, how do you think policy, you know, monetary policy is reacting to both of these scenarios? And, you know, how are the Fed and the European Central Bank, the ECB, adjusting their narrative and course of action given the surprises coming their way?
The Fed has acknowledged strong domestic growth, the strong labor market, and the slow progress in core services disinflation, but also the likely impact of credit tightening from the banking sector issues in March. So if you look at the FOMC statement, or if you look at what the FOMC did, in March, FOMC hiked rates by 25 basis points. But it changed its statement, which previously said, you know, ongoing increases in the target range will be appropriate. They actually changed it to some additional policy firming may be appropriate. Despite strong data, it also left unchanged the median Fed funds rate projected for the end of this year. Later in May, it again hiked by 25 basis points, but it dropped the line which said some additional policy firming may be appropriate. However, it continued to push against aggressive rate cuts markets had, you know, priced in. In June, which is at the latest meeting, it paused after hiking rates in almost in exactly 10 consecutive meetings by a total of 500 basis points to assess additional information and the cumulative impact of hikes done so far, you know, which acts with lags. But it clearly said additional policy firming may be required. The July meeting was live, increased its median projection for the Fed funds rate for 2023 this year by 50 basis points. So most likely two more hikes of 25 basis points each. And it increased even the 2024 projected rate to suggest fewer cuts. So it is a hawkish skip in that sense. And the fiscal debt ceiling fear is also out of the way now. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, markets have increased their interest rate expectations again back to where it was before the banking sector issues. So bond yields have risen, magnitude of yield inversions has risen again, and strong growth is giving the Fed that space really to stick to its job. The ECB, on the other hand, has acknowledged weaker growth, easing energy prices and tighter credit conditions, but also the persistent underlying price pressures and the upside risk to inflation from tight labor market and strong wage growth, particularly in the services sector. So in its latest meeting in June, it said barring any material changes to its baseline, it'll hike again in the next meeting in July. So the challenge for the ECB is that it started hiking in July last year, 4 months after the Fed did, and it potentially also faces slightly divergent economic situation in countries. So for example, we discussed the German data being, you know, weaker than the rest of the euro area.
Right.
And therefore, it also faces divergent fiscal policies in the countries. However, it's very likely that overall it is the last phase of rate hikes in the cycle for the Fed and the ECB after a historic pace and magnitude. But it is weaker growth that really differentiates Europe.
Okay, so essentially the Fed skipped a hike in the recent meeting, but future hikes are still very much on the table, right? Part of this hand of cards. The ECB, on the other hand, you mentioned, continued to hike and could do it again in its next meeting. So one main difference in what they're looking at again is growth. So I think that's an interesting point that details where we are in the cycle. So thanks for taking us through the US and euro area. You know, we could also benefit from a quick look at what's happening in other parts of the world right now. After all, it is all very connected.
Yeah, sure. So the other main economy is China. So like you mentioned, we discussed that in detail in the previous episode. But just to summarize, we spoke about China already slowing pre-pandemic, and then the pandemic property sector issues and power crunch adding to this, while the policy response there was quite measured and targeted. The reopening this year has turned out to be soft as consumer demand is weak. Property sector is still struggling and global growth is set to slow. And the wait for any meaningful policy response there to address consumer demand continues. Let's look at a few other economies. So in the UK, for example, we've had many issues from shortage of labor, tax cuts in the mini budget late last year, most of which were later reversed, tight labor market and still high inflation. So core inflation there is still rising, unlike the US and euro area, and it was above 7% in May, with services being very strong. The Bank of England hiked its policy rates by 50 basis points in June. It has flagged the persistent inflationary pressures there and that further hikes could be needed. And markets also, if you see, have, you know, aggressively priced in more hikes now. In Australia, inflation is likely past its peak and the labor market is eased. but still work in progress. Central bank paused rate hikes this month to assess the economy and risk to the outlook. But again said, some further tightening may be required. Another interest rate sensitive advanced economy is Sweden, where disinflation has been very slow, but growth data has been coming in weaker, with consumer demand falling. So its central bank hiked policy rates again by 25 basis points in June, citing the need to further dampen demand and, you know, given the risk to inflation from weaker currency there. So that's really on some of the advanced economies. Coming to emerging markets, so Indonesia central bank, for example, has left its policy rate unchanged in the last five meetings as inflation has been falling. Philippines has also paused as inflation eased, but this was again also due to some government price controls on food. In Malaysia also, inflation is easing, but some of the fall is, I mean, here also it's due to government subsidies. Central bank here has actually, you know, paused earlier this year. It hiked in May, which is a one-off, and then it has paused again this month. And if you look at Vietnam, manufacturing and export growth there has really slowed, and so has inflation. And the central bank has already cut rates there thrice since April. And finally, if you look at our domestic situation, so for India, our March quarter GDP growth was better than expected. Current account deficit has improved, although the recent goods and services monthly trade data weakened. GST collections and portfolio inflows have been buoyant. And our corporate and banking sector balance sheets are generally, you know, healthier now. So that's it. But the other side of it is that consumer durables production has been a bit weak in general. Rural economy is not doing that well. And there are potential risks on the horizon from an El Nino, which is, you know, through a lesser monsoon season rainfall. I think we've discussed this before. And also from slower global growth ahead. So the RBI has paused after rate hikes, but it has flagged inflationary pressures in the second half of this financial year and the need to progressively align inflation with the 4% target. Essentially, if we take a step back, most of the advanced economies are still facing higher inflation, driven more by services, but it is mostly off its peak. So central banks there are somewhere in the final phase of rate hikes in the cycle, but there is, again, some divergence among countries based on where inflation currently is versus target, expected trajectory of disinflation and growth. On the other hand, some of the emerging market central banks have paused after rate hikes as inflation eases. But some of these economies are, you know, structurally more sensitive to food prices, oil prices. The inflation there is impacted by government subsidies and so on. But it'll be really important for these emerging economies to ensure economic stability in this phase.
Brilliant. Srijit, that was such a comprehensive overview and a really useful summary on, you know, the global macro and central bank actions. So we've covered the US, the Euro area, China, the UK, and also summarized what's kind of happening in advanced and emerging economies from both of those perspectives. I guess the last thing to cover is, you know, just maybe three key takeaways one should have from this discussion. It was a very extensive one. So what are the three focus points you think will be really important to keep an eye on?
So one, growth continues to surprise to the upside in the US, but not everywhere. It has been to the downside in the Euro area. Two, labor markets are still quite tight by various measures in many advanced economies, particularly in the services sector. And this will have an impact on disinflation, which is progressing but slow. The challenge, in fact, could be the final leg of disinflation after, you know, easing from the very high readings towards the central bank's inflation targets. Three, monetary policy has responded aggressively and central banks are likely in the last leg of hikes in the cycle, as they also evaluate the lagged impact of hikes. Some of the emerging market central banks have paused on their rate hikes as inflation has eased. So the question on policy rates, therefore, is shifting from how much further to how long and when cuts come into the equation later, that is. Eventually, you know, what will matter is the long-term neutral rate for each economy. So this is the interest rate at which policy is neither accommodative nor restrictive and, you know, is impacted by various factors like productivity, savings, investments, and so on. So the estimate of the neutral rate, whether this has changed post the pandemic. So, for example, some studies for the US suggest, you know, this hasn't really changed since the pandemic and it continues to be low. So depending on that, and also depending on where actual rates are versus the neutral rate, you know, this will aid the assessment of whether policy is restrictive or accommodative, and this will really guide the future policy direction.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Srijit. I think those are, you know, three good takeaways for us to keep an eye out for. And it's not easy to really capture all that's happening in the global economy because, I mean, you know, like we always say, so many moving parts. Thank you to all of our listeners as well for tuning in. I hope, you know, you've been able to take something of value out of this podcast. We will be back with another episode of Let's Talk Macro. But in the meantime, just soak up all of the insights from this episode. Bye.
Thank you.
Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.